Yeah, it's Friday. Getting set for the weekend as we welcome you into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online tsn.ca, the TSN Go app, as well as on TSN4. Annie Petrillo alongside Jonas Siegel, national hockey writer for the Canadian Press, and we have ourselves TSN Radio rookie. By no means a rookie to the hockey world, because we have another writer with us today, national hockey writer for the Toronto Star, Mr. Kevin McGran. And you brought up a great point. Well, this is, okay, so this is how we also know you're a rookie. So, well, it's kind of my fault. I forgot to tell you that when we're on TV, we wear these kinds of earbuds. We don't put the big headphones on.
Well, I didn't put my big headphones on.
So you didn't put them on for that reason.
But then I'd look silly and I'd mess my hair.
Oh, because you worked hard on that. But then you missed you didn't hear the song and it's groovy and it's okay.
That's not a rule in radio, by the way.
What?
Even on TV, you can wear whatever you want.
What do you mean, wear whatever you want?
You can wear whatever headphones you're comfortable with.
Oh, of course. But I mean, if you want your hair to look good.
Oh.
And I got my hair cut today for this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's got the blazer
on. You know, most people on radio can't see your hair.
Well, this is true. But this is what happens in this new era of media,
right?
Of radio being on TV. Now, suddenly, you have to do, you know, the makeup and the hair. Although, clearly, Andy still doesn't do her hair.
No.
Exactly. It's pretty obvious. Now, Kevin actually brought up a great point. So, first show, I was talking about, you know, the National Hockey League. They're celebrating their centennial year. Toronto Maple Leafs doing the same.
This is their 100th season.
And then you brought up another anniversary that I forgot about.
The three of us all started the same day, the same season, covering the Maple Leafs full-time at the same time. Paul Maurice's first year. Yeah.
10 years ago. It's a decade. We are celebrating a decade together. How about that?
One-tenth of the NHL's history we did together.
There we go.
So since that point, they have gone through, so Paul Maurice, Ron Wilson, Randy Carlyle, Peter Horacek, and now Mike Babcock.
Yeah, we go.
So is that?
And they've gone through
Fergie,
Ferguson, Fletcher 2.0, Burke, Nonis, committee, and then Lamoriello.
That's a lot of change in
Then people
years.
Wonder why we have, like, scrambled brains. We're just trying to keep up with one team, never mind 29 others.
And why we never trust them, because they're always changing their mind. They're always saying this and doing that and then doing that and saying this.
But isn't it fun? It keeps us on our toes. So let's talk about them, Toronto Maple Leafs. And World Cup of Hockey started. We did see Team North America taking on Team Europe. This was the team we were all anxious to see. And they did not disappoint. This was a young team with a ton of speed. They played to that strength. They didn't slow down once. They were resilient. But, of course, Leafs fans want to hear more about Austin Matthews and Morgan Rielly. I mean, I don't want to leave Morgan Rielly out, but I think we know what Morgan Rielly brings. I think that's why there's no surprise when he does well. This was more about what can Austin Matthews do on North American ice against players that he will be regularly going up against in the NHL. And he did not look out of place. Do you guys agree?
I think he looked absolutely fine. That line that he was on with Nathan MacKinnon and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was dangerous all the time. And MacKinnon got two goals, one on the penalty shot.
Mm-hmm.
He did not look out of place. He looked like the first NHL-ready 18-year-old the Leafs have had since Wendell Clark. I mean, with all apologies to Luke Shen and all the others that came up too soon. He looked NHL-ready, if only for one game. We'll see what he's like in the second game and the third game and all that. And about Morgan Rielly, I don't know what it was. He looked bigger and more physical last night than I seem to remember him playing, but that might have only been a shift or two. But he looks like he might have bulked up a little bit. So,
well, I confess I only saw the highlights. I did not see the game live.
What?
And Noodles, by the way, I had a softball game.
Wait, that you were playing in? Or
no,
that you
I
were
was
covering?
Watching. What do you? Of course I was playing in it.
I'm just shocked. Wait a second, are you on Jeff O'Neill's team?
No, Jeff and I could never play on the same team. We're too...
Because apparently he broke his finger or something playing softball.
We just have different views on the sport.
Really?
But anyway, I think it's going to be interesting.
We'll address this later.
With Austin Matthews, like, Noodles did a really good job on TSN.ca. He had a video of kind of some of the intricacies of Matthews' game last night and how some of it, a lot of it, suggested NHL readiness. And I think it's going to be interesting in Toronto what people's expectations are going to be with regard to Austin Matthews. Like, how high will they be? Because, like Kevin said, the Leafs haven't had a player like this. They haven't had a player come in really I don't even know if you can use, like, maybe it's Sundin, but you haven't had a young player come in with this much expectation where you're talking Calder Trophy, where you're talking generational potential type talent, franchise centerman. So I wonder how they handle the expectations, how he handles the expectations, because, you know, we've seen with young players, Connor McDavid kind of being the most recent example, guys like this are used to that pressure because they've been under the spotlight for so long. So maybe it's not a thing. Maybe the expectation won't be a problem, or maybe playing in Toronto, it will be something that they'll have to manage.
Well, I think in the beginning of the game, you know, you saw a little bit of nerves, right? Like, he turned the puck over a couple times. But what I liked was that he didn't give up on the play either. Then he would go and fight for the puck back. It wasn't the slumping of the shoulders. And then very quickly adjusted to the game. There wasn't really the, I had a bad game, next game, you know, I'll try to be better. It was, I may have had a bad shift, but right away the next shift he was better. He improved as the game went on.
And that actually contrasts a little bit with Patrick Laine in Finland, because he said after the game that he didn't have a good game, that he wants to get better, but he wasn't getting better shift by shift as you say Matthews was. So, well, there can be a big difference between 1 and 2 and 2 and 3 and 3 and 4 through the draft. And Austin Matthews, to me, he's a physical player. He's a big player. To me, he is everything you said about Matt Sundin. I think he's going to carry that mantle, because there won't be another guy coming up after him. They're not going to get first overalls for a while, for another 20 years or so. That's kind of the plan.
That's what they hope.
So yeah, we presume. But the benefit for him in Toronto, and I think actually it'll help him and it'll help some of the other young players, is there are other young players of intrigue. So he's not like that one guy. Like when Nazem Kadri came up, we were all there. He was like the one guy, and so people were excited and they had these expectations, he's going to be this number one center and blah 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 blah, however unfair that stuff was. Now Matthews is coming up, and there's Marner and there's Nylander and there's Riley, and there's other young players who are kind of sharing that spotlight, and I think that will also benefit them. Like when they get training camp underway, for a bit Mitch Marner will kind of be in the spotlight because some of these guys won't be there. But then once Matthews gets back, it's going to be about Matthews, and it's going to be about Frederik Andersen, and it's going to be about Connor Brown. Like, there are other points, and we talked about it yesterday. This is part of the benefit of having a lot of good young players as opposed to a couple.
Well, and you're right. You diffuse the pressure in many ways, which we talk about the Toronto market being this pressure cooker, and then we almost wonder sometimes if that has to be taken into consideration when a player comes to play here. There's a lot of other things that they have to deal with, and we can go into a whole other discussion here about,
but do you guys think that's real, or do you think that's
what I was about to
created?
Say do we think do we can have a discussion on whether or not that's real or not? But to an extent, I think it can be real, depending on your personality. Everything is individual. There are players who truly can shut things out no matter what market they're in, and then there are players who want to read everything and know what's going on. And in this particular market where hockey is 24/7, it can get to you, it can weigh on you. I mean, it would be the same thing in our line of business if we sat there and read every single one of our Twitter mentions. You can go insane. But this is where I think the real onus falls on Babcock, the PR staff, the management of the Toronto Maple Leafs. How are they going to go about, you know, quote unquote, protecting Matthews? Maybe that means he's not available every day. And maybe it's not just Matthews. Maybe this is even like if Marner makes the team as well. Do they maybe not make them available every day?
Oh, yeah, those are the rules, actually.
The rules are that the rules are that they have to be, if they played or they practiced, they have to be made available 5 minutes after the room opens.
But loopholes. Somebody's injured.
But wait a second.
Somebody's getting
treatment. Andy, you know this. So during the TV broadcasts, reporters wait for interviews after the period.
Yes.
You will not be allowed, if you're down there, or if I'm down there, or whoever's down there, to interview Austin Matthews between periods.
Well, I can tell you that
unless that
this company
changing.
And the other company are both negotiating with the Leafs for exactly that.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
But, yeah, they
because that's a Lou Lamoriello rule.
Because Lou doesn't like rookies talking.
He doesn't like rookies talking. When Brenda Leipzig scored in Vancouver in his debut, it was a big to-do in Leafland to try to get him to appear on a...
Right, but when you're owned by two media companies and you're going to say Austin Matthews in his first game is not available for a TV interview,
We have seen Lou Bend this year. He gave Austin Matthews the bonuses that he wasn't going to give. He's never given to anybody else.
Yeah, but I don't buy into that whole.
And he's
thing.
He's also now releasing salary figures in their releases. Lou has grown, so mm-hmm. Lou might
baby
see
steps.
The baby steps. And I mean, really, I think what the media wants, what the TV coverage wants, if Austin Matthews does something significant, gets a hat trick, if Mitch Marner scores the winner in overtime, you have to talk to those guys. That's mm-hmm. the story of the game, and that's what broadcasters want, and I think they'll get that.
Now, Lou, though, I don't. He came out and said that he wasn't holding up, though, on the Matthews bonus. Was there not maybe some moving around money-wise?
I never bought into that whole thing. What were they going to do? He's the number one overall pick. You're not going to give him what he wants?
Well, of course, but this is what I mean.
They just didn't give him. They just waited.
Right. But other teams waited longer. Like, there are other contracts for first-round picks who took longer than
first
that.
First-round picks, not first overall picks.
I don't know. I didn't make so much of that. But to your point about expectations, I talked to Peter Chiarelli about the Oilers a couple weeks ago, and I asked him about McDavid, and he said exactly what you said. I said, how do you handle... Because the expectations for McDavid, we think they're high for Matthews. They're 10 times higher for McDavid. Like, I think he might win the scoring trophy this year.
Can we just say... How great he also looked last
night.
That
step he's got a step on everybody in the NHL.
Yeah. Right. He might win. Like, you can put him in the conversation. I don't know if he'll win it. I don't think he will. But you can put him in the conversation for Hart. Seriously. And, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic. But the one thing that Chiarelli said is, the one thing we have to do is manage his time off the ice. He said, we're not really worried about the on the ice because he can handle all that stuff. It's managing how much he talks. It's managing how much fan stuff he has to do, how much, you know, media interactions, all that kind of stuff is what they're worried about.
And he played 20 minutes last night, by the way.
He did. But see, this is real. This, and when you talk about the discussion of the media, and I'm not just talking about Toronto, but I think anywhere in sports now, this is real, what athletes have to deal with away from the field of play as well.
But get paid an awful lot of money, and they do it in every other sport, and nobody shies away from signing with the New York Yankees because the media market's tough.
No, I'm not saying the media market's tough in Toronto. I'm saying overall, in any professional sport, across the board, in any market, what I'm saying is that it's just a real thing now to have to deal with a lot of media. It's not your traditional television and radio anymore. It's, or your newspapers anymore. It's now your social media, as far as your Instagrams are going, and people do these Facebook live chats now. And these are all professions where they all want access to athletes. So at some point, this is where it almost has to be part of any sports organization to monitor a player's availability. I mean, I think that's going to be something that's going to be real.
But that's
really
where it's different in this market. If you have a bad game in Toronto, you're going to be requested after the game or the next day at practice. You're going to have to talk about it.
Oh, there's going to be expectations.
And there's
you
something,
have to expect that.
Like, I think in any job, there's something mental. If you make a mistake and then you have to kind of relive it, where you play in, I don't know, pick a smaller market, Nashville or Carolina, mm-hmm. you might not be asked about it. If you're going through 5-6 games where you haven't scored, no one's going to notice. You're not going to have to. Like, it's just added weight, I think, to some degree in Toronto. Whether you think that's legitimate or not, I think it's real.
Oh, yeah. No, I do believe that that is real. I don't think you can deny that. When you look at the different hockey markets in the NHL, there are some who have one beat reporter or beat writer, right? How many do we have in Toronto? I don't know. I got two of you right now in one room, you know? And
the thing that sort of drives me crazy about that whole thing, though, is it doesn't really exist in other sports. Hockey has convinced itself it matters. Toronto's tough, Montreal's tough, Vancouver's tough, Chicago, Philly. They've convinced themselves it's tough, and so hockey's filled with so many small markets that great players can go hide if they don't want to deal with the pressure of playing in a big media market. But other sports, it doesn't seem to be an issue.
It's a thing. When players go to New York, it's talked about how they're going to handle the New York media.
They love it.
Look at last night, Cam Newton, and even his post-game press conference, he's like, I knew you media. Everyone's gonna wonder how I'm going to deal with the media now. NFL players are talking
about
pressure.
There's no hiding in the NFL. That's too big a sport. Even the small markets are big markets.
We even saw when he was flossing his teeth. Apparently it was oranges. I was like, come on. Making the rest of us look bad. Now we have no excuse to be too busy to floss our teeth. If he can do it in the middle of an NFL game. I do. I just sometimes it's just like I'm busy.
2 minutes.
By the time I have to make sure you wake up and you got to drink water right away because that's what's good for the system. Then you got to take
hot
your
water,
vitamins,
apparently.
Your vitamin D. So by the time I have to go through my morning ritual, sometimes
You're not supposed to floss in the morning, I understand it.
Oh, wait. Now there's times you're supposed to floss?
Isn't it obvious you're supposed to floss after you eat? No?
Well,
I think you can floss as many times in the day as you would like. No one will.
It's time to go to break when we are actually discussing flossing. We've got more to talk about. That's Kevin McGrann. That's Jonas Siegel. I'm Annie Petrillo. We'll be joined on Leafs Lunch as well by Kevin Weeks, who's greatly immersed in this World Cup of hockey. Stay with us. Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Welcome back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050, streaming online as well as on your television set on TSN 4. Annie Petrillo alongside two national hockey writers, Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press, Kevin McGrann of the Toronto Star. All three of us celebrating our 10 years of covering the Toronto Maple Leafs and the NHL. It's our anniversary, too. Any excuse for me to get presents, I will put that out there. World Cup of Hockey, we were discussing Auston Matthews, his performance. Tonight we're going to see Team USA take on Team Canada. And this also means for Leafs fans a first look at James Van Riemsdyk since breaking his foot back on January 9th. Only played 40 games last season and was excelling under Mike Babcock. In fact, he was on pace for about 60 points last year. That would have put him around like the Wayne Simmonds and the Ryan Johansons and Ryan O'Reilly. And I think his best total is 61 points. So he would have been hitting some close to some career highs there. But, of course, it was cut short. And then,
he was doing it with lesser talent because he used to play with Phil all the time.
Make that argument, too.
Yeah.
So how important is this going to be as well, World Cup-wise, to get him back out on the ice to see where he is if you're a Leafs fan?
I think James Van Riemsdyk is probably the Leafs' best player, most accomplished forward. And I think it's important that he has a good tournament, that he carries it into the mm-hmm. the regular season. I think you need him. He will drive the offense for the most part. As much as the other guys are all going to be like fun to watch, James Van Riemsdyk, like, to me, is a bit of a rock. He's he can produce, he can skate, he can hit. He's a presence in front of the net. He's everything you want in a power forward. And he will set the tone for them offensively in many ways.
Well, and what's funny is he kind of flies under the radar on this team. Like, I haven't heard him talked about much because there's so many other players that are kind of drawing the spotlight. Like, Frederik Andersen's going to be a topic at training camp. Even Kadri to some degree. But Van Riemsdyk, to your point, he's kind of one of the guys that they can depend on. Like, they know to some degree, I think, what they're going to get. I think what was interesting, like you mentioned the career highs, what was more interesting than just the points is how he was doing it. Like him, Bozak, and Kessel, they were, if not the worst defensive line in hockey, then they were right in that ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
And suddenly last year, his first year under Mike Babcock, he was playing more on the other end. And part of it was how Mike Babcock was using him. But I think we saw an evolution, or the start of an evolution, under James Van Riemsdyk. And it's interesting, like, it seems like he's been around for a while. He hasn't really. I think he's 26. He's still kind of just, like, coming mm-hmm. into his own to some degree. So yeah. He's a guy who I think, like, do you play him with Auston Matthews? I don't know. Like, he's a guy that at least they know what they're going to get, I think, to some degree.
Well, I was just wondering, when you look at the lines, when you see the lines go out there, for years it was wherever Matt Sundin was, that was your first line. Wherever Phil Kessel played, that was your first line. And to me last year, it was wherever JVR was, that was your first line. And then when he got hurt, I couldn't tell what the first line was. I mean, Kadri, you know, got the minutes, so it was wherever Kadri was. But this year, to your point, who do you play him with? Do you have a veteran line of JVR, Kadri, and Komarov to go out there and eat up the big minutes? Or do you mix those guys up with the youngsters?
I think you have to, right? Yeah. Don't you?
I don't know. I mean, the other question is, I don't know how many youngsters they're actually going to have. You know, they have a bunch of veteran players, Brooks Like and Colin Greening, and these guys are... And Rich Clune, like, they have a bunch of those guys.
And once again, when you look at who's waiver exempt, still a lot of those guys are. So they do have the flexibility, if they wanted to just send them back down and not have to face any kind of punishment of losing them.
To my eyes, last year, Soshnikov, Hyman, Brown looked like NHLers as much as Nylander did, but I'm not sure they're going to play. I'm not sure there's a spot for them, at least early in the season. It'd be very curious.
That's where I almost wonder, is JVR, he's a key component here. And to your point, we're talking about all these youngsters, but if he doesn't perform, if he's not that steady rock, a guy who's been with the team for a few years now, I believe he's, to your point, he's still young, but I think he's 28.
JVR?
Yeah, isn't he? Isn't
no,
he 28?
He's not 28.
I feel like he's.
He's 20. Max 27. I think he's 26.
I gotta look into.
Let's
that.
Bet.
I'm not a betting woman. Don't like losing money that I could be spending on nicer Who's things that I could
friendly
wear.
Bet.
No. Okay, friendly bet. I get your food if I'm right.
I already brought food, so.
Gonna eat it. So here's the thing. Like, is he the key, though? Like, this is the guy, you know, the flashiness, the sparkly things are the new names of the Matthews and the Nylanders and the Marners. But it's got to be pretty significant for a guy like JVR to play well, I think, for this team to really tick.
And the flip side of that is he's on a very cap-friendly contract. And if he is an elite producer, as we believe he will be this year, and this team stumbling around 10th or 11th place, as we think they will be, is he a trade commodity to come back and get you more draft picks and more prospects? Is that really going to be the play?
Oof,
I hope not. Like
him?
I think the world of JVR as a hockey player. I think he's really coachable. I think he takes the coach's message and goes with it, and that's what we saw with him and Babcock last year. So I hope JVR is here the rest of his career. I think the world of him, but there will be a temptation to move older players and move bigger contracts, and his is a nice size for a lot of teams to be able to take if the Leafs are going to be selling at the trade deadline.
We also saw some other Leafs in action in Roman Polak and Milan Mihalik and Nikita Zaitsev. Zaitsev, you know, became a name yesterday because of a hit on Sobotka, maybe not what he wanted to be known for, injuring a player, although we think he's okay. Marian Hossa, we know, also went to hospital. Apparently he's okay. He rejoined the team.
But what do you think some of the NHL coaches watching that? I think JT Miller at some point went
JT
out.
Miller, didn't he leave in the third?
Like, if
something?
I'm the head coach of some of these teams, I'm just going to be wincing.
And if you're the owner of some of these teams, you'll be wincing a little bit mm-hmm. more.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of money invested in a lot of players who are playing in this tournament. And I guess it's the exposure for the NHL. They're back on ESPN. I'm not the biggest fan of this particular tournament, as anybody's around me knows. But the players, I talk to players about the risk of injury, and they accept the risk of injury. They could get injured in shinny. They can get injured in exhibition.
Guys,
they're going to get injured.
Practice, they get injured. And just getting ready for the season.
But
yeah, but this is different.
But
because you're doing this right before train. Like, there's been no training camp.
You're going from 0 to 60 pretty
right.
fast.
Yeah.
These guys usually take a while.
There's
to get
something.
Up to speed.
See, okay, so let me ask you this. Is it because of the timing? Is it because of where the World Cup of Hockey is being played in September? Would this be received differently if it was February or March?
It's a really good question, because what happens if you're... Okay, let's pick a player. Give me mm-hmm. one player in the tournament.
John Tavares.
Okay, John Tavares. Okay, John Tavares, let's say the tournament, instead of being held at the start of the season, is being held in February. Mm-hmm. And John Tavares, he's got this nagging injury that he's been playing through. The Islanders are right in the thick of the hunt for their division. Does now he play for Canada at the World Cup? Or does he say, you know what, I could better use the rest. I'm going to rest while the World Cup is happening and get geared up.
See, well,
as opposed to the Olympics, where I think most guys, if they can play, they're going to play.
And John Tavares got hurt in the last Olympics.
Right, and missed the rest of the year.
I was having a little deja vu there of 2014. I think... You know what I think then? If it is held, see, this is where it's almost a no-win situation, because if it's held in February and that is the case, I think you're going to see more guys actually pull out of the tournament than you would here in September, where unless you're.
But
as
there were a lot.
What we've heard of some guys, they had off-season surgery or they were still dealing with injuries, so they just wanted to still have them heal. And then, yes, there was, you know, the one or two guys that we heard were actually injured preparing for the World Cup of Hockey. But I still think that maybe you would have more guys pull out in February. If this tournament were to be held in February, to that very point, because there maybe it's a nagging injury, but now they have to worry about making a push for the playoffs.
Well, we saw a whole bunch of guys pull out of this tournament, Duncan, Keith, and so people will pull out of tournaments. That'll always happen. What I like about it's not going to happen in February, but what I like about a February one is that in the even numbered years, you have a World Cup in February, you have an Olympics in February, you have a World Cup in February, and you build it into the schedule, you build it into the expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, the NHL always complains that they shut down the league.
That's the key. They don't want to shut down for anything.
But in a World Cup, you don't have to shut down the league. You can just play them you can play the games in Columbus and Philadelphia.
But you are shutting down the league.
You're shutting down the league, but you're not shutting down the buildings, and that's what the owners often care about more, is the buildings, the use of the buildings.
What about cutting the season?
And that'll
terms
never
of
happen.
Well, but if you're going to make all this extra money off the World Cup, couldn't you afford to then
I brought
up one time.
You'll
just be making
time,
extra money. That's all they'll want.
One time I brought up making the first round of the playoffs a best of five again, and I nearly got mauled to death.
What was the argument against?
It was, well, they just said they never will again because now you get used to the extra games for, to the point, it's money. It's, you know, you're making money. You want the, even if it's just one extra game, if it's a game six or you're hoping
I'd
there's
two. I'd love a play-in. Six, seven, eight, nine, and ten play-in, two out of three.
Oof.
Yeah, six.
Don't make too many changes all at once, you're catching. Oh, relax.
It's hockey. We all have ideas. We all want to change the game. We all want to tinker with it. It's funny.
See,
it's the one sport that always gets tinkered with.
It is. It does get tinkered a lot with. But this, my argument was more also along the lines of we are asking so much of these players now. So here we are talking about the World Cup. They are playing so much. Now, granted, it's certain players because they're the ones who are always getting called by the national team, right? But there's these certain players, and if you want to take like a Sidney Crosby, for example, he's always going to get called to play in the World Cup. He's always going to get called to play in the Olympics. If his team is not in the playoffs, he's always going to get the call to go to the World Championships. He's always going to get the call to go to All-Star. When does a guy like Sidney Crosby get a break? Like, we're asking so much of these players. It feels like the offseason is non-existent. And I did hear Ray Ferraro bring up, you know, on Overdrive with the guys a couple days ago that maybe we're not going to see morning skates anymore. Maybe morning skates
are
the way of the past.
I don't know why they
Because morning skates. Morning
you
skates
have
are...
to find a way to get your players to rest. Whether, if you're not going to shorten the season, if you're not going to make the first round or two rounds of the playoffs a best of five, where are you going to give these guys a break? You know, I know they introduced the bye week for certain teams, but at some point there has to be more of a rest. You can't expect these bodies to last.
The morning skate, you're dead on. The Chicago Blackhawks had a morning skate like the middle of November and didn't have another one until the playoffs.
Yeah, well,
they just
you know what?
And the Rangers did that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and coaches like Mike Babcock is a good example. He doesn't make his practices very long at all for that reason. And the previous coach in Toronto was known for having really long practices. So
you got to give your guys some rest. All right, we're going to welcome to the show now Lise Lunch here, Kevin Weeks from the NHL Network. He's also calling ESPN's coverage of the World Cup. Weeksy.
What's up, AT? How are you? How are you guys doing?
We're good here. How's it going?
Everything is great. No complaints. Fun one last night. Certainly fun to watch Team North America. They're a lot of fun to watch play. So much skill and speed and pace. And man, oh man, the talent on that team through the roof.
Okay, let's maybe just for a second, because it's, you know, let's give a little attention to the team they're playing against in Team Europe. On TV, they looked really slow, but I know it was mentioned that 11 of the players on Team Europe were also playing in pre-Olympic tournaments, so maybe they were a little tired from that, flying on in, didn't have enough time to gel. But what did you see out of that Team Europe that really needs an adjustment?
I would say there are a lot of different phases of their game, but specifically just the way in which they defend. When you have a team that's average age is just around 29, just shade over 29 years old, plenty of NHL experience, a couple future Hall of Famers on that team, of course, in Holsa and Chara, and Andrei Kopitar, perhaps, for that matter, I just expected more from them from a defensive standpoint. You knew that it was really going to be Team North America trying to explode with their speed, playing the up-tempo game, playing the skilled game. But positionally, Team Europe was caught out of position a lot, which is interesting, especially playing on an NHL-sized sheet, 200 by 85 at regulation. So I felt like they were chasing the game around defensively. Their coverage wasn't what it needed to be. Their reads weren't what they needed to be in the D zone and in the neutral zone. And what will be interesting, and speaking of guys on that team and also in speaking to Paul Maurice, is they do have a lot of talent up front. But how will things work out on the defensive side in terms of the D pairings? And then also, what style of play are they going to employ? Because, as you know, they have players representing different European nations. So, by and large, typically, European players are very skilled, as we know, very talented, a little bit more creative. But each country and each host nation plays their own style. So, Ralph Kruger, Canadian-born head coach who has tons of experience in Europe, he's going to try to find the right blend between a general European style game and somewhat of a North American style game based on this team, as you guys pointed out, not having that much time to gel.
Well, and Ralph was Team Canada's expert at the 2014 Olympics for the big ice. I wondered, we saw Matt Murray get the shutout yesterday, a former goaltender yourself. I was talking with Braden Holtby the other day. He was really concerned about what this was going to look like for the goalies. Can you kind of put us into the shoes of what it might be like playing some of these games so quickly for a goaltender?
Sure. I mean, coming from Holtz, that says something because he's all world. And and as you know, he's so cool and calm and composed. But he has a point there. I think from the goalies, you know, I was just talking to Jonathan Quick earlier today. And the biggest thing for the goalies right now is, A, timing, as you would know, their timing and their reads. And then, B, just where they're at physically and where they are in terms of their physical stature, their response time, and not necessarily from a conditioning standpoint, but in a way that actually translates on the ice. And that's the biggest thing because, as you know, guys are creatures of habit, and the seasons are the seasons for a reason, and guys prepare the way they do for a reason. But I heard you guys talking about in the segment when I first got patched in where things are changing and things are continuing to change and evolve. The off season for me never was really off, and now more than ever, I don't really think it's off, especially for this current group of NHL players. So they've had to ramp up their training. I'll give you an example. Matt Murray, you were just talking about, I spoke to the Pens assistant goalie coach, Mike Buckley, and he said that he was skating with Matt Murray for 2 weeks, doing on-ice drills in advance of this tournament. I know Jonathan Quick, who works out exceptionally hard with Jay Prentice in Connecticut, he'd been on the ice early as well, doing goalie drills, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that most importantly for the goalies, it's that timing, seeing how the bodies are able to react. And but, hey, let's be honest. Isn't everybody excited that Carey Price is back? Like, come on. I know we've got a lot of you goalie haters out there, so we're going to give you love too, but for the goalie aficionados out there, Carey Price is back.
We're happy and we're nervous, Weeksy.
That was going to be my question, but Jonas has got a follow.
No, that was where I was going to go.
You mean Mark Bergevin.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, yeah. Like Carey Price was saying in Ottawa, Kevin and I were both there, he was saying that every goalie in this tournament basically is facing some sort of layoff. His is obviously significantly longer. Does that make a difference that he's been off almost 10 months and the other guys have been off maybe 4 or 5?
Since November 27th, yeah. I was actually at that pregame skate in New York at Madison Square Garden where they played the Rangers. It's a fair point. I know that he's chomping at the bit. I mean, in the case of Yaroslav Halak, too, last night, I thought he was pretty sharp early in the first period and through the first half of the game. But for him, too, he was facing his first action since late in the spring when he had to have off-season sports hernia surgery. So there have been extended layoffs for some guys, for sure. I think for Carey Price, though, and just based on his frame of mind and where he's at, he, too, has been working exceptionally hard. He spent a lot of time in Montreal. He says his knee feels mechanically sound. I spoke to Team Canada's goalie coach and Montreal's goalie coach, Stéphane Waite. He said there's no other test that they can put him through. No other test, mentally, physically. He has to get in and play. And Carey Price is certainly looking forward to that opportunity. So I'm excited to watch him. I think if you read Braden Holtby's comments and just from speaking to different goalies around the league, Carey Price is kind of a beacon. He's a little bit of a beacon when it comes to goalies. A lot of guys around the world look to him and ideally would like to emulate his style of play. But he's so calm, so big, so composed. And he plays at such a smooth tempo, it's pretty hard to do. But strictly from a goalie perspective, I'm really excited to see what he has. I'm really excited to see how he looks. I'm sure he'll be great.
The composure of Carey Price is the one thing that has always amazed me. He's just so calm, cool, and collected. And people talk about that and the way he's a calming effect for the rest of the team and even the coaching staff on the ice. But, Kevin, you were there in Montreal watching him practice and watching all three goalies practice, obviously. How did he look to you in practice?
Price just looks like himself. I mean, there's technically, he's flawless. Physically, he's in great shape. His knee's structurally sound. He just looks like himself. And I think if you go around the room from Sidney Crosby to Brett Burns, who I was in contact with too, like every one of those guys says he just looks like himself. And everybody's been impressed. And Carey Price, you know, his demeanor is kind of like, he's a little bit Teflon. He's got kind of a Teflon demeanor. Yeah, well, guys, you know, I've done this before, so you know if you saw his quote the other day, so he looks every bit as good as I anticipated he would, and as early reports in the summer indicated he had looked, and he's just more than excited to get back out there, and certainly takes a lot of pride in playing for Team Canada as well. He's had a very distinguished, impressive resume, of course, but especially with Team Canada too, he relishes playing for Team Canada and wearing the maple leaf on his chest. So I think he's going to be fine.
What was that sound effect? Meh.
Yeah.
How's Carey Price? Meh.
Got the T-shirt, got the gold medal.
Sorry.
Done.
Oh, man, we're talking to Kevin Weeks here at the NHL Network.
Sweat that guy. Kidding me? He doesn't even sweat.
No, he really doesn't. So, Weeksy, once again for ESPN, you're calling the game. So we're talking about Carey Price, Team Canada, Team USA. And John Tortorella had said once they named the team, he sent every single one of the players a video of the 1996 Cup. Because he wanted them to all be inspired. That's when the USA actually defeated Canada. And they ended up winning that best of three final. And he wanted all of them to draw inspiration from there. Are you getting the sense that Team USA is really... Because, okay, here's the thing. Whenever we talk to coaches, they always say, we're not worrying about the other team. We're worrying about our game. Are you really getting a sense that Team USA is definitely worrying about Canada's game?
I think to some extent, and it's a healthy respect. It's certainly a healthy respect that they have. You know, having played for John Tortorella, I know his mindset, and you'll hear him use that word a lot. And also the way that this team was constructed. I mean, there's certain players that could have been on that team that were left off of that team because they want to play a certain brand of hockey primarily to be able to match up with Team Canada. And they want to be able to play a grinding style. They want to have guys that block shots, that get in on the forecheck, that are aggressive, that are relentless, that play a physical game. So all those are hallmarks of John Tortorella. Make no mistake about it. So, yeah, I definitely think that that's a big kind of factor in how they were able to construct this team. And I'd also say, too, when you look at this team, yeah, they want to lean on that inspiration. I mean, that 96 World Cup of Hockey was huge. But we're fortunate to have Brett Hull and Chris Chelios as a part of our ESPN coverage team. They're in the studio in Bristol. And, you know, just hearing stories from those guys, and those guys also realizing what that tournament meant, what a Mike Richter meant to a Jonathan Quick, when Jonathan Quick tells me Mike Richter was his favorite goalie. You know, there's Corey Schneider says that's why he wears number 35 in honor of Mike Richter. And we all know what a lot of those legends and those hockey legends, of course, and Hall of Famers, but also those U.S. hockey legends, those guys have done a lot for the game, and they've certainly helped pique a lot of the interest. So they're leaning on that. That 96 World Cup of Hockey was amazing hockey. I was actually watching some of it yesterday online, and that was amazing hockey. It was fun to watch. It really was. So those guys spawned a whole generation of players, as you guys know.
There were brawls in the exhibition game between Canada and the United States.
Listen,
Eric Lindros got into it.
We're setting the scene.
Yeah. It's funny you said that. It seems like you're lacing them up for tonight because you're dialed in. But it's funny you said that because in our seminar, when we had our seminar in Bristol, once they started talking about that specifically, Kelly's blood, like, literally started boiling. He's got all his fan, beak out, all his skin. I could see his face getting redder and redder, if that's possible, being as tanned as he is. And then Brett Hull, too, who you guys know is actually born in Canada, was a dual citizen, but played his entire, you know, career for Team USA internationally. He, too, got pumped up. So if that's any indicator, yeah, I definitely think that rivalry is only getting stronger. And I think, too, we're seeing the growth of the game in the U.S. It's come a long, long way. And it isn't just Michigan, the Boston area, New York area. I mean, Pittsburgh now is turning out players, be it a Brandon Saad, be it a John Gibson, Arizona now with Austin Matthews, Florida with Shane Gostisbehere. There's tons of kids that are coming out of California now, too. So I think when you look at a lot of our Canadian players, like Keith Primeau and Kelly Chase, and there's so many different guys that are Canadian players that have retired in different parts of the U.S. that have impacted minor hockey. Mike Pekka, you know, our old minor hockey captain here with the Toronto Red Wings in Buffalo, and you look at what he's done with their grassroots program. Marty Biron, who also is there working at the Harbor Center for the Sabres. So I think that's had a big hand on that growth of hockey in the U.S. as well.
Weeksy, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on and Leafs Lunch today.
Okay, guys. My pleasure. Thanks. Lunch on you.
Yeah, nice one. That's Kevin Weeks, NHL Network, as well as providing the coverage of the World Cup of Hockey on ESPN. Speaking of the American team, trying to draw inspiration from 1996, the American women's hockey team at the 2014 Sochi Olympics tried to do just that in 1998 when they won gold over the Canadian team, but it didn't work.
Canada won gold. It worked for 58 minutes, 30 seconds.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
All right, we've got more coming up here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050, streaming online and on the TV, TSN 4. Like Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 2,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Welcome back to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Streaming online, tsn.ca, the TSN Go app, on the TV, TSN 4. Annie Petrillo alongside Jonas Siegel and Kevin McGran, two national hockey writers, one for the Canadian Press, Siegel, one for the Toronto Star, McGran. So speaking of writers, our Kristen Shilton here at TSN put up an article. She's been following the Toronto Maple Leafs. She's been at skates. And she has an article up right now on TSN.ca on Brandon Press. We briefly touched on him yesterday, Jonas. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he really does have a good shot at making the Toronto Maple Leafs lineup, where would he fit in? And I know we're talking about the depth right now and the young players that the Toronto Maple Leafs have. But what about still having gritty guys? Like, do you still need veteran guys, sandpaper guys? Where do you see a guy like Press fitting in, if at all?
He'll play behind Matt Martin on the fifth line if he makes the team. I mean, you do need guys like that. I think you need them a little less these days than you did before. But you do need, I mean, they've got Komarov. He's a gritty sandpaper guy. They've got Matt Martin. I think they've signed Brandon Prust to A, you know, you get a guy for nothing. Maybe he's fit and he makes the team. You've increased the competition level at a camp where you've already got eight guys playing somewhere else. And if you get an injury, you've got your plan B. If one of your grit sandpaper guys goes down an injury, you've got a guy in camp that you know and you can trust. I don't know Brandon Prust well enough to know if he's still an NHL player. He's one of those guys that strikes me as like the middle class that's really getting squeezed out.
He fights a lot. Like we talk about sandpaper, which he does have, but he still also fights a lot. So does Matt Martin. But if you look at the amount of games Press played compared to Martin, he's fought more. So there is the question of whether or not you even want that.
Well, what's dying in hockey right now?
Well, that's the question, right?
I have my depth chart of their team in front of me, and I just counted 12, 13, 14 guys who I think will make it. Mm-hmm. Ahead of him, I don't think he has a shot. And I mean, you look at some of the underlying numbers, puck possession, it's not good. And this is a team that embraces that stuff, as they should. So I think
there's multiple voices in the front office, including Lou's, that suggest that their puck possession thing is not the primary motivator. I mean, I think they will be a puck possession team. That's kind of the way Babcock coaches, and they're invested heavily in it. But there is room on a roster for sandpaper guys, and that's why Matt Martin is here, and that's one, right? But you need him, and if that guy gets hurt, you need the backup. And maybe, and like Rich Kloon last year was up and down. He's the same kind of player. Maybe Brandon Prust is the Rich Kloon of this year, although they've re-signed Rich Kloon too. So,
mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're going to keep an eye on as well, just to see what he can do, because he'll have a chance when camp opens up. Because we've been talking about all these other players being away. Will other guys now, like at World Cup of Hockey, will some other guys just have their moment to say, well, wait a second, keep me in mind?
Well, I think Myrtle tweeted something out that a lot of teams are just bringing these PTOs on because of the World Cup. Like, they need to fill their rosters for some of these exhibition games.
Oh, you're just toying with somebody's emotions then.
Talking,
isn't
right?
that horrible?
I mean, well, the Leafs had a whole bunch. Like Devin Setoguchi last year, a couple other guys they brought in on PTOs.
Yeah.
So it's a normal thing
Brad
to do.
Boys. Mm-hmm.
Brad Boys, he made the team. Yeah. So it can happen.
So you're saying,
but they have
a chance.
I mean, this is like Jonas's depth chart here. 11, 12 guys, and you probably have three or four guys that could still probably play ahead of him. Mm-hmm. So
right,
it depends what kind of roster you're going to want. And Lou is very open to.
Lou doesn't pick the team though.
But he's open to.
But Lou always has the strings to the puppet a little bit. No. Come on.
I'm just picturing him like Dr. Evil, just laughing like mercilessly in charge.
Yeah, Lou says a lot. So here's something that came out. There's actually a couple things. Connor Hellebuck, by the way, who got called up last year by the Winnipeg Jets, looks like he's somebody they really want to invest in as far as being a goalie. He's worn the number 37 for his career. So he actually got special permission from the Dan Snyder family to wear 37 for the Jets. Many of you may remember back in 2003, Dan Snyder passed away after a car crash. Danny Heatley was in the car as well. And since that time, 2003, nobody in the Atlanta Thrashers organization, and then when they relocated to the Winnipeg, nobody has worn the number 37. So Hellebuck got special permission from the Snyder family. He's commemorating Snyder as well on his mask, and then he's going to have a certain kind of insignia stitched inside of his jersey throughout the year. Seems like a nice touch.
That's a very nice touch. It's you know, sometimes hockey players know how to do the right thing, and that's that's kind of sweet.
So here's another thing that I want to get your opinion. I know we only have a couple minutes here, but the Boston Bruins, so they have their new practice facility that they opened up this season, and their president, Cam Neely, has decided to put the Boston Bruins logo on the ceiling. It's this massive B up there instead of on the floor.
Praise be.
Okay, so I already know where you're going with this, because he said even when he played, he goes, it just became wasted energy to constantly tell people, stop stepping on the logo, walk around the logo, please don't step on the logo. And he said, I'm just going to eliminate that hassle, and I'm going to put the logo on the ceiling. I was going to get your opinion on it, but I, for one, like this, because I'm like a little rabbit hopping around the room trying desperately not to step on the logo. And then you have teams like the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're great, but they travel with their floor mats and everything, and they put the floor mats like outside the room with their logo on it. So now I'm leaping over this floor mat to get into the room and then leaping to come out. I think it's a brilliant idea.
If the logo is so important, why is it on the carpet where everyone can walk on it? Well, yeah, I think having it up, that's a brilliant idea. I don't know why someone hasn't thought of it already.
But in case people don't know, so when you're in the dressing room, a lot of teams have the logo on the floor right in the center. And some of these dressing rooms aren't very big. So once you get media in them, and then you're telling people there's this big circle in the middle that you can't walk across, and if you do walk across it, you kind of get heckled. That's kind of
wrist slap by the PR.
Like the Ottawa Senators, their logo is massive.
And at the World Cup, when Team Canada took it over, they put a big carpet across it, so that you're not walking on the logo, you're walking on the carpet on top of the logo, which is just
weird. Yeah, the Leafs do that too, right? In their dressing room, they put a carpet over. But it just, when you're dealing with that amount of media, and then now all of a sudden we're supposed to all be squeezing up against the stalls, so then players are now complaining that they're getting whacked with cameras, or that we're now sitting in their stalls because we have nowhere else to go. I just think it was a brilliant idea by Cam Neely and the Boston Bruins. I would like to see more of that, because there is respect for the logo.
I think you should start a segment on the show, Media Gripes, and just finish it every day.
The funny thing at the
Peter Griffin Family Guy thing, the Grind My Gears segment. Did you ever see that in Family Guy? I'm going to start that one. All right, guys. Well, it was an absolute pleasure. Kevin McGran, Jonas Siegel, I'm Annie Petrillo. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. Don't go anywhere. We've got some more great sports talk coming up here on TSN 1050. It's TSN 1050 today with Mike Hogan coming up next. Enjoy your weekend. Catch you on Monday.